Hey, Danger Danger is here with a special Halloween announcement. Part one of our Patreon-exclusive Halloween bonus content will be premiering Wednesday, October 16th. Stick around to the end of the episode after the credits and blooper for a sneak preview of that. Remember, you can access any of our bonus content by signing up on Patreon for just $5 a month, or by volunteering as an episode transcript and wiki writer. Shoot an email to dndarkpodcast@gmail.com for more info on that. That's all for now. Enjoy the show.
Do you like D&D, improv, and a podcast where the DM can't control the player's intrusive thoughts? Well, then Flip of Fate is what you're looking for. This loosely D&D podcast is about four misfits being roped in on an adventure by a wealthy centaur wizard. We also have a three-part Halloween special out now set in the modern world about four teens caught up in a small-town horror. We played that one shot in a simplified D&D system close to the Call of Cthulhu system. Now in our main campaign, we play in D&D 5e. And if you're looking for some nitty-gritty D&D and advanced rule following, you won't find it here. We're just five close friends that enjoy improv and D&D with some chaos mixed in there. So come and check us out. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts at Flip of Fate. You can also find us on all socials, so stop by and say hi. Again, find us and listen to us at Flip of Fate. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your show.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jers, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us at the table today is the DM of the New Age Geeks show, Queer and Present Danger, Cece, a.k.a. Cola May. Hello!
Hi!
Thank you so much for joining me today. So to get us started and kick off a little bit, why don't you let us know a little bit about who you are, tell us a little bit about the New Age Geeks channel, and about your show.
Yeah, so I'm Cece. I'm kind of a smaller TTRPG creator. I got into D&D about 4 years ago. I joined the New Age Geeks channel back in 2022 when we started our main show, Forging Fates. And I started my own show, Queer and Present Danger, back in September. So it's a high fantasy homebrew D&D campaign with an all-queer cast.
Awesome. So since you're both a DM and a player for different New Age Geeks shows, can you tell me a little bit about what your experience is like on both sides of that and how your experiences as a player have influenced your DMing and vice versa, how being a DM has influenced you as a player?
I feel like being a player has definitely influenced my DMing in a way of like, I know what I want to experience as a player. And so I want to provide that for my players and check in with my players about like stuff that they want throughout the game. I don't know how much DMing has affected myself as a player. I guess I do try to pick up more on role play and try to like lead, like make it a more player driven game rather than a DM driven game. But it's also like kind of hard not to metagame a little bit when you're playing after you start DMing.
Oh, 100%. In my own personal games, since I've started DMing, I've become so much more reckless as a player, partially because I know what I as a DM look for and want. I am way less cautious and barrel forward towards plot points with a lot more urgency since I've been on that side of the table.
I completely get that, like, absolutely. But in a sense, like, I'm a little more careful about it in a way. I'm also just a paranoid person in general. So I don't mind, like, if my character dies, like, I'll live. But I'm also just like, I'd prefer if that didn't happen.
I get you. I imagine a lot of it comes down to, like, your personal player sensibilities, too, and the types of games you like to interact with. And
yeah,
what your priorities are. For me, I'm a very story and character work centric, both player and DM. The way that I run D&D Dark, it is very heavily centered around the characters. The plot is kind of shaped around and focused on them. So for your show, for Queer and Present Danger, since it is a homebrew campaign, I want to ask a little bit about your process in setting that up and what your philosophy is like for facilitating that player engagement and enjoyment. Are you building the campaign around the characters? Are the characters kind of being slotted into this story that you wanted to tell? Is it somewhere in the middle? What is your process like in all of that?
I find it's somewhere in the middle. Granted, because this is actually my first time DMing a long-term campaign, I may have thrown the players like right into the plot towards the beginning, but I'm so gracious for my players because like they took it and like they're having fun with it. And I'm trying to let them tell the story. I want them to make the decisions that lead me to reveal these plot points. And so it's a lot of both. And because I care so deeply about the input from my players, like you ask them, I'm checking in with them after session. I'm like, what did you guys think? What did you like? What didn't you like? Stuff like that.
That's a fantastic habit to be in. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That sounds like a pretty good way to approach something like this, especially coming in with your first time, since you are driving it with a lot of input from them. To ask from like a structural under the hood standpoint, in building this story in this campaign, how much of the settings is informed by their choices versus what you set up in advance? Are you reacting more to their choices to build the setting around them? Is it like cities that you had already previously mapped out? I know that your story revolves a lot around a pantheon of gods, and so you've got a certain amount of mythology that you've baked into it. How much of that was from you versus how much of that is from them?
I would say, going into it, it was a pretty bare bone structure. Like I mapped out the major cities, you know, where important shit's gonna happen. But like with the pantheon, I have like the primary gods set up and like they have a little bit of information about each of them in like my lore document. But I will pick up on inspiration on things from like either what my players say or things all around me. Like I'm like, oh, this would be a great idea for like a conflict between these two gods or like these two major powers sort of situation. Because we have in our party one cleric. We did start out with two. Unfortunately, we lost one of our players. So we have one cleric and we have a warlock. So we have two people that are sort of directly connected to the gods in some sort of way. And so taking what they give me and I'm running with it for sure.
Gotcha. Having that kind of ebb and flow and keeping that world building in flux and in a constantly evolving state is such a great way to do a homemade campaign, especially since you don't really have as much that you can fall back on. So to that extent, too, were you drawing inspiration from any outside sources? Are these gods based on any like works of fiction that you really enjoy that you kind of took and adapted? Is it entirely an original set? Is it taken as like a modified version of the Forgotten Realms gods? Stuff like that. Where is your mythology stemming from?
So I got the inspiration to sort of create these gods. It was actually from a TikTok about world building.
Great resource.
Honestly, it gets the creative juices flowing sometimes. So I saw this. I wish I knew the creator's name off the top of my head, but it's like you take post-it notes, you draw a line down the middle and you write like opposites of each other. So there's like fire and water, anger and peace, or like anger and gentleness sort of situation. I shuffled up these post-it notes and I grab two of them. And then I take one of each of the pairs and pair it with the other. So like if I had anger and gentle and fire and water, oh, we have the gentle goddess of fire versus the god of the raging seas. And so they form a connection and they're sort of like that opposite of each other. And so a majority of my pantheon was sort of based around that technique.
That is fascinating to me. And this is like, to put it into context a little bit, as somebody who is a lot less original with it, partially by design, the premise of Dian Dark, it's a gothic campaign that is set in a fictional version of real world England with all the players playing classic monsters. And it's kind of a mishmash of gothic literature, 1930s cinema, and Forgotten Realms kind of jammed in there. So a lot of the mythology and the folklore and everything that I'm drawing from is coming from these pre-established things that I'm pulling from, taking, adapting, and reshaping. So I'm fascinated by that process of coming up with these from scratch. I love the idea of the random generator method of taking these concepts, their opposites, and an adjective, and kind of generating from there.
I literally found this TikTok, and then one night I was drinking out at a bar and I had a pack of Post-its in my purse. And I always carry a pen with me. So I look at my friend, I'm like, you're going to think I'm weird. Don't worry about it. And I start writing these up, I shuffle them up, and then I spread them out and like pair them up and everything. And my friend is like, you are such a fucking nerd. I'm just like, yes, I am. But this is so much fun. Like, I've been very creative like my entire life, and it's been hard in my adult life to find like a proper like outlet for it. When you're a kid, you play pretend on the playground. I was always playing pretend on the playground, or like if I was over at a friend's house. And so I basically found the adult version of that.
Absolutely. I have very fond memories of going around with my friends, basically just make-believing that we were Pokemon trainers.
Oh my God.
And going...
I'm sorry, you just brought back a memory.
I'm very big in cartoons.
Okay.
And I grew up with Boomerang constantly on, so I was a huge Hanna-Barbera fan growing up. So a lot of like classic cartoons sunk deeply into my brain. A huge Disney Afternoon fan. So a lot of that influences a ton of my sensibilities. I pull in my writing creative work a lot of tropes from those sources. What kinds of what media do you draw on to get your juices flowing and get inspired by, and things that are like close to you like that?
This is going to sound weird, but I get a lot of inspiration from my roommate.
Okay.
My roommate, my best friend, her name is Maggie. I mean this in the sweetest, kindest way possible. She is a fucking weirdo. And she will say the most out of pocket shit. And I'm sitting here like, what the hell did you just say? And then I stop and I think about it and I'm like, wait a second, I can do something with that.
That is a lot less weird than you think. I have a full document on my phone of notes that I've just gathered over the years of just weird shit that I've heard people say just kind of out in the wild.
I am a part of a server. It's just like a bunch of us friends, and they have a channel specifically for out of context quotes that either any of us say or we hear people say. I cannot tell you how many Maggie has in there, but it's honestly like I just hear random shit or see random shit out in public and I'm like, I can do something with that. Like, for example, me and Maggie, we were out at dinner one night and Maggie ordered a drink and I misheard what she said. And I'm like, what the hell is an acid stamp? And she's like, no, the drink is called an ass in the sand. And I'm like, but acid stamp, I can make a D&D homebrew item out of that. And then I did. I took my little notebook out, grabbed my pen and started drawing it out and made a homebrew item out of something that I misheard.
You really never know where inspiration is going to come from. There's a lot of moments like that. For me, it's a lot of I'll be watching something, I'll be listening to something. I get a lot of, with my creative process, a lot of it comes from music, where I'll be listening to something and then get like a snapshot image in my head of a very vivid scene kind of frozen in place. I used to do a fair amount of writing as a hobby. A lot of how I would approach writing is I would kind of have that vivid image in my head and work backwards from there and do a lot of setup to reach this like snapshot in my brain of this one moment that my imagination leapt to, and building up, creating context for it, and making my way to that kind of climactic moment.
Yeah, music is definitely a huge inspiration for me. I love music. I'm almost always constantly listening to it. I listen to it while I'm at work, while I'm driving, while I'm cooking, cleaning, whatever. There was a song that I came across called Lion by Saint Mesa. And the first time I heard it, I'm like, that is a D&D character. And I made a D&D character out of it. You can find it on my TikTok. And there's a lot of just like, I don't know how to phrase it. It's just like music. It like gets the juices flowing. It like makes me want to like move and do stuff. And like, I am a person that pays a lot of attention to lyrics, which is why like music hits me so hard, because I'm like, okay, I like this song, I can relate to it. And just also taking bits and pieces of like this one line of a lyric, I could turn that into a story.
I sympathize with that big time. So I know that you were saying earlier that as an adult, it's kind of difficult to find these sorts of creative outlets. When you were younger, what kinds of creative outlets would you turn to? Were you into writing? Were you a theater kid? Were you into like doing music and stuff like that?
I was a theater kid. I've been in theater as long as I can remember. There was a time when we were putting on like a show or whatever, and the director, he was also playing the piano, shout out to Mr. Williams, he like missed his cue, and my parents said I gave him the dirtiest glare, because I'm like, how dare you? But having those sort of like role models in my life, that's just like, you can do theater, you can go on stage and pretend to be somebody else. Hell yeah. So that was like my primary creative outlet, especially through middle school and high school. It was fun. It was a way to sort of, I don't want to say escape, but it's kind of that. Like, I get to go be somebody else for 30 minutes to an hour and a half and dance and sing and act my little heart out.
That's a lot of the appeal of TTRPGs, and I think that's why there is so much of a pipeline of theater kids to the TTRPG community. It's pulling on a lot of those same sensibilities, and especially in your adult life, you have so many more strains on your time. It's so much more difficult to consistently maintain a foothold in that kind of world of make-believe. It's very freeing to be able to exercise those same muscles in a more open environment. I look at TTRPGs as essentially doing long-form improv with big, heavy guardrails.
Oh, 100%.
The rules and structures of the system keep you very narrowly within certain bounds. It's fun to kind of mess with them and push and pull and see how much you can stretch in any given way based on what the story is demanding and kind of like where your brain is taking you. But at the end of the day, it's very similar principles. And to have a successful TTRPG, it's very similar in terms of the rules of theater and improv in maintaining that safe space, making sure that everyone is being heard and listened to. One of the things that my theater classes in college was super big on, and like one of the fundamental rules of improv, is that listening is the strongest skill that you can possibly acquire.
I 100% agree.
And like what you were saying, how you check in with your players all the time and you're constantly getting a feel for where they're at, where they're interested in exploring, kind of shaping around them. That kind of communication is immensely important. And I want to pivot now to kind of the focus of your show. It is an all-queer cast. You do stream it regularly. So I want to ask what kinds of things, like those kind of check-in conversations, that you do in order to keep that space as accommodating and welcoming and safe, both for the players, for yourself, and for the audience as possible.
I definitely would say that making sure we have a good like moderator team or admin team on both like our Twitch and in our Discord is definitely a big piece of making everybody feel like safe and welcome, being like, hey, no bullshit here. We're all here to like bond over TTRPGs. If you got something shitty to say, you can leave, go say it somewhere else. And like you said, like I do those check-ins, but then it's also like trying to make sure that everyone feels welcome in our community. Like when people join our Discord, there's like a bunch of us that go say hi to the new people. We also on the New Age Geeks channel, there's a show called Goodberry Cafe. It's on a temporary hiatus now, but it was once a month we would bring in like a whole new group of people to play test essentially these like indie TTRPGs. And that was a great way to like give like representation and also being like, hey, you can come join us for this. Like we actively want you to come play with us. And then I am currently in school and I'm working a lot, but once I'm out of school, I do want to run maybe like monthly one shots in the server where I'm like, hey, anybody can join.
So jumping off of that, are there any other systems that you are itching to try, other campaign settings that particularly call out to you as a game that you would want to run one day?
There's a game store up like about an hour north of me where my parents live that I love going to and just like looking at what they have. I discover all these new like TTRPG systems. Like I found one called Ink that I really want to try. It's like you're already dead in a sense. I can't remember it all off the top of my head, but it looks so fun. I would also love to try a Starfinder, like basically the Pathfinder, but like a sci-fi game. And I also desperately want to play Thirsty Sword Lesbians. I have the rule book for it. I just haven't had the time to actually sit down and read it.
I'm starting to acquire more and more rule books that are piling up in my to-read list that I just haven't gotten around to yet. So I sympathize with that big time.
I would also love to play in a Western setting. I'm friends with a few people who are playing D&D, but in a Western setting and sort of like adapted it to that. And they let me listen into it and it's a ton of fun. sort of like that thing where you said about your game, D&D Dark, where it's like roughly England mixed with like a bunch of other things. It's like taking that D&D sort of fantasy concept, but also throwing it into like a different setting.
It's so much fun trying to think of those settings, take those adaptations. Like my personal favorite thing to do in the creation process is character creation.
If you looked at my D&D Beyond, I think I have about like 78 characters in there. And I've only played about 10 of them. It's just that whole thing of like character creation and that entire process. Like for my campaign, that was easily the best part of prep was. So something that I did with each of my players is I sat down one-on-one with each of them. And then we just spent as much time as we wanted talking and building their character and sort of being like, what do you want your character to experience? And like, I know for Forging Fates, the show that I play in, the character creation process was so fun because with Joe, I went in with one idea and I came out with a completely different one. And it was so fun. And I keep being like, hey, Joe, what if we did this? Hey, Joe, what about this aspect of her past? Stuff like that. And then also like sort of receiving that same attention from my players being like, hey, what if this was a part of my character's past? I'm like, yes. Absolutely. Let's talk about it.
That is so much fun. I've been trying not to put my brain too heavily on season two stuff until season one is done. But a little while ago, everybody was around for a holiday party. We were meeting up. Our players are kind of spread out. So we very rarely will all kind of be in the same place at the same time. But we had a holiday party recently where I had a blast going through with everybody and building their characters with them. And it's crazy how much changes in that collaborative process.
Oh, 100%. One of my players completely changed their class. Like they were like, oh, well, what if I was a warlock? And I'm like, well, you know that there is this like cleric subclass. And they're like, oh shit, you're right. And I'm like, yes.
It's so fun to pick their brains and see where they want to go. And that's a lot of my tentative plans for season two and world building are based on the ideas that they were presenting in their character creation. So when I was getting together with one of my players for like, okay, you wanted to play Mothman. So let's build what your version of Mothman looks like. What are your ideas? And that shaped a huge part of how the world works based on that. My buddy who's playing the Loch Ness Monster went in a direction that I did not anticipate at all. And now the two of us are collaboratively working together to shape what Atlantis looks like in this world. It's just one of those really out-of-the-box ideas that link together so many disparate thoughts that shape what this world looks like. So it's really cool going through that process. And I just love doing that. So it's very gratifying to hear somebody else experiencing that same joy.
Oh, yeah. And it's another like creative outlet, as we sort of mentioned earlier, is like, I can build this character, I can give them a story. And just sort of being able to like let that out and be like, okay, you exist now.
So to pivot a little bit and circle back around to Queer and Present Danger, you stream the show primarily, but the New Age Geeks channel on YouTube also uploads backlogs of previous streams. So for somebody coming in to discover your show, where would you say would be the best place to start? Would it be jumping into a stream in progress? Would it be going back through the backlog of any episodes, any particular episode that jumps out at you as like a particular strong point? What would be the best way for somebody to discover and get involved with Queer and Present Danger?
I think the best way to discover and get involved would to be just join a stream. If you see us live, like join in. Granted, you might not grasp like the full context of the story. It's just sort of, you'll get to see like a sneak peek of like, okay, this is what our table is like. Here is how all of our players sort of play and the characters and just like the characters' energy. I would recommend starting at the beginning. Granted, because it was my first time, you could probably tell I was really fucking nervous and, you know, no added pressure because surprise, you're live. As for a strong point, I cannot remember the episode exactly, but there was a session where I got to utilize the butterfly effect in real time.
Oh, that's fun.
Without like spoiling anything, we have a character. Her name is Bloom. She hears a small voice in the back of her head telling her to just throw a rock. And so Bloom throws a rock and it lands against the side of a carriage, which then startles the horse and the horse starts running. She decides to cast sleep on the horse. which sends the carriage toppling over, knocking over a torch, and setting a temple on fire.
I love seeing those dominoes fall in real time.
Well, and the thing is like, I sort of had this like butterfly effect planned out, but I'm also sitting here like, I didn't expect her to cast sleep on the horse. And I'm like, you just made this 10 times better.
Butterfly affecting things is fantastic. I'm a big proponent of a thing that I go out of my way to try to do to help the world feel dynamic and lived in is I try to pay really close attention to what actions the players are taking from the perspective of the NPCs and what the logical consequences and end results of that would be.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very fun to see that kind of cascading chaos.
Oh, 100%.
For example, as a very minor spoiler, one of our players who is Imhotep, who's the mummy, he at a certain point started to go down a path of possibly, he's a cleric, he was possibly multiclassing into warlock that we explored a little bit. And we made a joke about how from ways that his warlock patron was starting to manifest, there was one point where he was doing a visual gag of sitting reading a newspaper, and I had a thing of the newspaper coming to life. And because of that, that started a domino effect to where his warlock patron became Garfield.
Oh my god, I love it.
It was one of the dumbest running jokes of the show. It resulted in some of the weirdest, most bizarre, most absurd, funnest, funniest moments of the show. So it's incredible what butterflies out.
Oh, 100%. Everybody brings that fun energy, but it's also just the way that like people play their characters. And I'm again, like the decisions that they make, I don't forget those. Like, oh, you stole that bag of holding from that NPC? Just you wait. If my players are listening, don't worry about it.
That is one of the underappreciated jobs of the DM. And it goes back to that important skill of listening. But it is what makes the world lived in. So I love that you've got those moments that you can pull from. You kind of already answered where I was going to pivot with that next question of like any particular, if not episodes, then moments that stand out to you as your favorite or some of the best examples of the show. Anything else that jumps to mind as like a particular favorite moment of your show?
Oh, gosh. Unfortunately, one of my favorite episodes that we've had, we lost.
Oh, no.
And so it is now missing in the internet. They had gone through this sort of like puzzle of an abandoned temple and went into the underground of it. And it was a combat heavy session. Like the entire first half of the episode was combat. And one of our players went down. And I have a rule at my table where death saving throws are private between me and the player. And they rolled a natural one. So it was scary. Like I had an NPC there that did have like healing spells prepared, but in that episode, them almost dying and also just the reactions of all the other PCs of being like, oh shit, we can get that close to death. There was like heavy role play and just sort of like hints and masks dropping. It was a beautiful episode, and I'm so sad we lost it.
That's a shame. And those really do make some of the heaviest moments. And I've got a similar rule with the death saves. I keep them private entirely. And basically every turn when a player would do their death saves, I roll for them and have them, their life flashes before their eyes. And so they narrate moments from their lives that wouldn't otherwise make it in the process of like doing the campaign. They've got a couple of options too. They can also, a rule that we've started implementing is without knowing where their death saves are at, they can choose to intentionally fail a death save in order to get an action back from being on death's door.
I love that.
They don't know how much wiggle room that they've got since I keep death rolls private, but they can, as like a last final stand, get back up and keep doing one more thing.
Oh my god. See, I have so many plot points that I am excited for in my campaign, but because of like the level of intensity that they are, and also just like for what would make sense with the game, I have to wait. I have to push it off until they are higher level. And it physically pains me because I'm sitting here like, I'm so excited for this twisted moment to hit you guys. But it's not time yet.
That was me for most of the campaign. and that's kind of a thing that I've let my players in on a little bit, is that I intentionally let their characters be a little overpowered and I level them up very quickly because I'm impatient and want to get to the stuff that will kill them.
That is fair. I have never thought about it. Like, if I'm impatient, I can just level them up quicker. But it's that whole thing of like wanting to tell a story and not wanting to like full on like...
It has to be earned.
Yeah, you have to earn it.
My rule of thumb for level ups, the party levels up anytime they collectively almost die.
I might steal that.
So that's my way of doing the milestone stuff. So it's not necessarily every arc they level up. Sometimes they'll go an arc without leveling up. Sometimes they might level up more than once in an arc.
Okay.
That happened more early on and very, very rarely. Usually what I would do is I would kind of plot it out of like, okay, after you get past this little story arc, then this is a convenient time for everybody to level up. But it quickly turned into a thing of like, okay, you really haven't had an excuse to really stretch yourselves with where your power set is at up to this point. So I'm going to delay that level up until you need it.
Right.
So that's my unofficial rule.
Our DM for Forging Fates, because we just had like a gala and then we had like one episode break and then like a major combat. The gala lasted 3 sessions. So like 9 hours IRL time. And then he's like, you guys will level up after the gala. And then it's like it lasted for another session and then another session. And then we like leveled up. And I'm like, cool, there's some big like plot hooks that will happen after this level up. And then we went into this major combat that lasted 2 full sessions. And he's like, yeah, no, I leveled you guys up because you were going to fucking need it. And I'm like, thank God you did, because without that, we would have gotten TPK'd.
I've had a few close calls with my campaign, but I tend to err on the side of making things too difficult as opposed to too easy, knowing that I can always kind of pull back in the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the toys that I want to play with are the really high level deadly ones. So I jokingly tell my players all the time whenever I level them up, and they'll hit me back with the, ha ha, you fool, you don't know what you've just done letting me have my level 8 powers. You won't think that in a few sessions.
Yeah, if you tell me the combat was too easy, it's on you for what happens next.
What I try to aim for is for every significant event for them to just barely eke by is where I aim for, where it is survivable only just if they really put everything into it. Sometimes I've made them easier than others, sometimes a little bit too hard and I've had to scramble on the spot. There was relatively early on, I wanted to play with a false Hydra.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
I had set up that the enemy cult was using basically a dog whistle to kind of control the false Hydra and was doing a whole like cult plot within town. And I realized pretty quickly into the fight, oh, this is going to wipe them. They're not strong enough to handle this. And my on-the-spot pivot was to then draw a lot of focus and attention to the whistle that was controlling it. And trying to like shift focus and pivot them of,
yeah,
you're not going to be able to kill this thing. Get a hold of the MacGuffin to be able to control it and call it off.
Yeah, I guess one issue I have is I learned the hard way that like the challenge reading doesn't fucking matter.
No,
it's definitely that thing of like trying to get that feel for your party's like combat, like awareness and combat ingenuity.
And the CR system is incredibly unintuitive because there's so many factors that go into that. It doesn't factor in abilities. It doesn't factor in items or anything like that. It's just an equation of how much health do they have compared to what is the maximum amount of damage they can deal on a turn. That does an equation and reaches out to a number that gets you the CR rating.
Gotcha.
Which is cool from like a spreadsheet perspective, but for a person coming in, it can be very misleading.
Yeah, I run a very like high magic game, and so I homebrew a lot of like magic items and I make them like pretty well available to my players. And so I always gotta like remember like, hey, they have magic items. They have like these abilities where like the cleric, she's a Tempest cleric. She can do like max damage on a spell that does lightning or thunder damage. I gotta fucking remember that. Otherwise, she's going to like one-shot this thing.
So I've basically gotten through pretty much all of the questions that I had laid out to ask you. Is there any other miscellaneous things that you want to add or anything you want to throw back to me? Things that you want to touch on that haven't been covered yet?
I guess homebrew items. I love making homebrew items. One of my favorite items that my players also love is called the Sparkling Orange. It was inspired by a Celsius Sparkling Orange flavor. And so basically it's a magic orange that looks like it's made of gems. If you eat it, you have to roll a D100 and the D100 determines what happens. You either have to roll on the wild magic table. You either get like a third level cure wounds spell. Or if you roll a 100, you immediately gain the benefits of a long rest.
That is fantastic. I've thrown in a few homebrew items of my own into the show, and it's a ton of fun coming up with thematic ones. One of my personal favorites that has been used and abused to the player's benefit and detriment, that is relatively spoiler-free because I introduced it fairly early, is I gave them an enchanted pocket watch, which what it does is it steals time from your future self. So you can use the pocket watch to instantly gain all the benefits of a long rest, but then your next long rest, you get nothing.
Oh, I love that.
And if you use it multiple times in quick succession, you start accumulating exhaustion.
Okay.
It was an item they never used, and then it became an item that they constantly used.
Love that.
Because they kept digging themselves deeper and deeper into sleep debt, and it's an item that spirals out of control. It's been fantastic because it's allowed them to survive some very dangerous circumstances, but it also puts them in more danger.
I love those kind of items.
Because it delays and stretches out the amount of time that they have to go without a refresh. So it's been fantastic. They've asked me if I've regretted giving it to them. I have and have not at the same time. It's been a lifesaver because I want to throw all of these super deadly and dangerous things at them, but don't want to actually kill them. And there's only so much that I feel I can justify pulling my punches.
Right.
So giving them stupid exploits like that is the fun of doing a homebrew game.
Well, I guess it's also the thing where it's like you give them homebrew items and then they forget they have them. My players are sitting on a couple of really like important things that would be like fitting for their character to have. And then they forget they have it. And I'm like, but I made that for you. Hello.
We started after a certain point of items constantly being forgotten. A habit that we've gotten into that is one of the best things that we've done is not every session, but most sessions. Before we start playing, before we start recording, I will have everybody go through their inventory and announce to everyone what is in their inventory.
That's such a good idea.
It took us too long to get into the habit of doing that. And now we do that almost every session because as a player myself too, I constantly forget what's in my inventory unless I go out of my way to double check it.
That's fair.
Any other miscellaneous things you want to touch on?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, in that case, why don't you remind us one more time where we can find your show?
You can find my show, Queer and Present Danger, on the New Age Geeks Twitch channel. We are live every other Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, or else you can catch up on our previous recordings on our YouTube channel, new_age_geeks.
All right. Well, thank you again for stopping by and chatting with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So one more time, thank you for joining us. This has been Table Talk. I'm Danger Dangers. This has been Cece from Queer and Present Danger at the New Age Geeks, and I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dangers, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Cece, also known as Cola May from the New Age Geeks, Queer and Present Danger. Links to their show can be found in the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro was created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his works on Instagram at jeremyvellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Welcome to D&D Dark Presents Muppet Alien. I am your host and game mother, Daniel Cruz.
It's time to light the light.
Captain Miller, wait for me!
There There's no way. It's been 75 years.
There is a way, because that's how long this ship has been missing, according to Weyland-Yutani records.
Check the radar to see what it is that Davis was looking for, and to make sure that it happens. Hi-ya!
You push the button, you hear the rumble of the elevator shaft from the elevator rising. When the door opens, you can see that there has been a firefight in here.
Do we want to take the stairs?
So as long as you didn't roll over a 6, you guys managed to keep it together. Just barely.
So hopefully we're looking for Muppet reviews.
Well, if you're to be making comments like that, I'm going to have to charge you.
You charge me? We are on a mission by Weyland-Yutani. You can't charge me. I'm the one charging you.
Listen. Semantics, all right?
All right. I've got one question for all of you here. What is happening?
D&D Dark presents Muppet Alien. Premiering October 16th, 2024, only on patreon.com/dndarkpodcast.
It's time to